The hall of the opera is granted. The Salon d'Hercule shall be drawing-room, not only the officers of Flandre, but of the Swiss, of the 100 Swiss, nay, of the Versailles National Guard. Such of them as have any loyalty shall feast. It will be a repast like few. And now suppose this repast, the solid part of it, transacted, and the first bottle over. Suppose the customary loyal toasts drunk, the king's health, the queen's, with deafening vivats, that of the nation omitted, or even rejected. Suppose champagne flowing, with pot-valorous speech, with instrumental music, empty featherheads growing ever the noisier in their own emptiness, in each other's noise. Her Majesty, who looks unusually sad tonight. His Majesty, sitting dulled with the day's hunting, is told that the sight of it would cheer her. Behold, she enters there, issuing from her state rooms, like the moon from clouds, this fairest, unhappy Queen of Hearts. Royal husband by her side, young Dauphin in her arms. She descends from the boxes, amid splendour and acclaim, walks queen-like round the tables, gracefully nodding, her looks full of sorrow, yet of gratitude and daring, with the hope of France on her mother bosom. And now the band striking up, O Ricard, O mon roi, l'univers t'abandonne, O Richard, O my king, the world is all forsaking thee. Could man do other than rise to height of pity, of loyal valour? Could feather-headed young ensigns do other than by white Bourbon cockades, handed them from fair fingers, by waving of swords, drawn to pledge the queen's health, by trampling of national cockades, by scaling the boxes, whence intrusive murmurs may come, by vociferation, sound, fury, and distraction, within doors and without, testify what tempest-tossed state of vacuity therein? A natural repast, in ordinary times a harmless one, now fatal. Poor, ill-advised Marie Antoinette, with a woman's vehemence, not with a sovereign's foresight. It was so natural, yet so unwise. Next day, in public speech of ceremony, Her Majesty declares herself delighted with Thursday. And here to set against this is Carlyle's picture of the mood of the people. In squalid garret, on Monday morning, maternity awakes to hear children weeping for bread. Maternity must forth to the streets, to the herb-makers and bakers' queues, meets there with hunger-stricken maternity, sympathetic, exasperative. Oh, we unhappy women! But instead of bakers' queues, why not to aristocrats' palaces, the root of the matter? Allons! Let us assemble! To the Hôtel de Ville! To Versailles! There was much shouting and coming and going in Paris before this latter idea realized itself. One Maillard appeared with organizing power and assumed a certain leadership. There can be little doubt that the revolutionary leaders, and particularly General Lafayette, used and organized this outbreak to secure the king before he could slip away, as Charles I did to Oxford, to begin a civil war. As the afternoon wore on, the procession started on its 11-mile tramp. Again, we quote Carlyle. Maillard has halted his draggled menads on the last hilltop, and now Versailles, and the Chateau of Versailles, and far and wide the inheritance of royalty opens to the wondering eye. From far on the right, over Marly and Saint-Germain-en-Laye, round towards Rambouillet, on the left, beautiful all, softly embosomed, as if in sadness, in the dim, moist weather. And near before us is Versailles, new and old, with that broad, frondant Avenue de Versailles between, stately, frondant, broad, 300 feet as men reckon, with its four rows of elms, and then the Chateau de Versailles ending in royal parks and pleasances, gleaming lakelets, arbours, labyrinths, the Ménagerie, and great and little Trianon. High-towered dwellings, leafy, pleasant places, where the gods of this lower world abide, whence, nevertheless, black care cannot be excluded, whither menadic hunger is even now advancing, armed with pike-thirsty. Rain fell as the evening closed. Behold the esplanade. Over all its spacious expanse is covered with groups of squalid, dripping women, of lank-haired male rascality, armed with axes, rusty pikes, old muskets, iron-shod clubs, baton ferret, which end in knives or sword blades, a kind of extempore bill-hook, looking nothing but hungry revolt. The rain pours. Gadukar, so caracolling through the groups amid hisses, irritating and agitating what is but dispersed here to unite there. Innumerable squalid women beleaguer the president and deputation, insist on going with him. Hasn't his majesty himself, looking from the window, sent out to ask what we wanted? Bread and speech with the king, that was the answer. 12 women are clamorously added to the deputation, and march with it across the esplanade, through dissipated groups, caracolling, bodyguards, and the pouring rain. Bread and not too much talking, natural demands. One learns also that the royal carriages are getting yoked, as if for Metz. Carriages, royal or not, have verily showed themselves at the back gate. They even produced, or quoted, a written order from our Versailles municipality, which is a monarchic, not a democratic one. However, Versailles patrols drove them in again, as the vigilant Lecointre had strictly charged them to do. So sink the shadows of night, blustering rainy, and all paths grow dark. Strangest night ever seen in these regions, perhaps since the Bartholomew night, when Versailles, as Bassompierre writes of it, was a chétif château. Oh, for the lyre of some Orpheus to constrain with touch of melodious strings these mad masses into order, for here all seems fallen asunder in wide yawning dislocation. The highest, as in down-rushing of a world, is come in contact with the lowest, the rascality of France beleaguering the royalty of France, iron-shod batons lifted round the diadem not to guard it, with denunciations of bloodthirsty anti-national bodyguards are heard dark growlings against a queenly name. The court sits, tremulous, powerless, varies with the varying temper of the esplanade, with the varying colour of the rumours from Paris. Thick coming rumours, now of peace, now of war. Necker and all the ministers consult with a blank issue. The Œil de Bœuf is one tempest of whispers. We will fly to Metz. We will not fly. The royal carriages again attempt egress, though for trial merely. They're again driven in by Lecointre patrols. But we must send the reader to Carlisle to learn of the coming of the National Guard in the night under General Lafayette himself, the bargaining between the Assembly and the King, the outbreak of fighting in the morning between the bodyguard and the hungry besiegers, and how the latter stormed into the palace and came near to a massacre of the royal family. Lafayette and his troops turned out in time to prevent that, and timely cartloads of loaves arrived from Paris for the crowd. At last it was decided that the king should come to Paris. Processional marches, not a few our world has seen, Roman triumphs and ovations, Kabiric cymbal beatings, royal progresses, Irish funerals, but this of the French monarchy marching to its bed remained to be seen. Miles long and of breadth, losing itself in vagueness for all the neighbouring country crowds to see. Slow, stagnating along like shoreless lake, yet with a noise like Niagara, like Babel and Bedlam, a splashing and a tramping, a hurrahing, uproaring, musket volleying, the truest segment of chaos seen in these latter ages, till, slowly, it disembogue itself in the thickening dusk into expectant Paris, through a double row of faces all the way from Passy to the Hôtel de Ville.